All right, welcome to this week's episode of Double Nine Minutes. I'm Jeff Mabry with Eric Dahl.
Hey, hey, hey.
It's just after the close here, February 9th. We got the Lunar New Year starting. Obviously, the Super Bowl is this weekend. Hopefully Sam, I'm kind of pinch hitting for Sam here today, and hopefully he feels better and is able to enjoy the Super Bowl on Sunday.
Yeah, we'll send good vibes to Sam, who's recovering from a hoarse voice.
Yeah, we spent about 5 minutes talking with him earlier, and everyone should be happy that he's not hosting here today. Hopefully, Sam gets some tea, drink some water. Also, I heard from someone that bourbon helps, so hopefully you feel better, Sam. But let's get right into the where are we for this week. And let's see, let me refresh. And it looks like we did get a close above 5,000 today on the S&P 500. First time, all-time high. Looks like it closed at 5026. So been flirting with that 5,000 level, closed on Wednesday at 49.95, closed on yesterday at 49.98. Closed there above 5,000 here today.
To the moon.
To the moon, yes. Hopefully not and back. If we go to, so S&P was up 1.4% on the week. That was led by, it looks like tech was up 2.8%, consumer discretionary up 1.5%, and healthcare just right behind that at 1.4%. The big loser was utilities, down almost 2%, consumer staples down 1.4%, and communication services actually negative there at negative 0.8% on the week. Russell 1000 was up 1.4%, Russell 2000 up 2.4%, so Russell 2000 outperforming there. Growth had a very good week, up 2.5%, and value, a slight positive. Looks like it's up one basis point as of the time of recording here. And the S&P equal weight actually up 0.66%. So lagged the market cap weighted index slightly on the week, but at least turned into some positive performance. We go and let's shift over to the bond market here. Looks like the rates were up across the board. All I see is red or gray. Normally when we look at these things, when yields are up, it actually shows in green, but that's actually bad for prices. Yields on the 10-year up 15 basis points to end the week at 417. 2-year up 12 basis points to 448. And the long bond up 15 basis points also to 437. And so as you would expect, that really led to a negative week there for the fixed income indices out there. The Barclays or the Bloomberg Aggregate Index was down about 0.75%. Looks like the worst performer was investment-grade corporate bonds. As they have a longer duration, does make sense that they would be down the most in a rising rate environment, down almost 1% for investment-grade corporates. Both the treasuries and agency mortgages right there around negative 80 basis points or so to round out those two sectors. The non-index sectors, emerging markets, up 3 basis points, so we'll turn a slight positive there. But both your below investment grade corporate credit sectors, high yield and bank loans, both up about 0.25%. So turning a little bit more positive news or positive there, as you expect, given the increase in the in kind of your risk asset side of things. Commodities also turned in a positive week, up about 0.5%. Looks like the big winner there was the energy. Energy commodities up 3.5%. Looks like oil was up 6%, WTI crude oil up 6% to end the week at 76.5. The big loser there was industrial metals down 3%. It's almost an inverse there of the energy side of things, with copper down 3.5%. So copper, the big loser. Looks like gold ended the week at 2024. So down slightly, down about 60 basis points there. And that's it really for the week, Eric. I know it was kind of a slow week from macro land. I know that it was I was in and out most of the week, so I wasn't really able to catch the intraday movements there. But I was wondering if there was anything kind of noteworthy that happened during the week.
I mean, I think any week when the S&P gets an all-time high is a big week for financial markets. So I'm going to say it was a pretty interesting week, kind of from a macro standpoint. Jumping into it, the ISM services dropped on Monday, and it was kind of a home run as far as strength of services. It was a 53.4 print, and the estimate was only 52. That's a 13 consecutive months over 50. And the chair of the ISM had a very bullish statement saying that the growth rates were attributable to faster growth in new orders, employment, and deliveries. So I mean, it's just a pretty positive outlook from a services perspective, and I think that kind of put wind in the sails of the market, so to speak, and allowed the bulls to continue their run. Very, very light week economically, speaking from a macro perspective, and the SLU's report dropped on Monday as well. And as some of our listeners may or may not know, we covered the SLU's, which is the Senior Loan Officer Opinion Survey on Bank Lending Practices, and it's done by the Federal Reserve. Here on Minutes, we had an episode on the SLU's on May 12th, 2023, episode 115. The SLU's were discussed in great detail. I'm just going to kind of go over the high level of this report. But if you're interested in learning more, check out that episode, and we talk all about the ins and outs of the SLU's. This SLU's report painted a picture of what I would say tightened current conditions, regarding all loans on balance. The report said that there were tighter standards and weaker demand for commercial and industrial loans for firms of all sizes. And the report also went into saying there was weaker demand for commercial real estate loan categories and tighter standards. From a household perspective, there was tightening credit conditions for residential real estate loans, except for government-backed. So government-guaranteed loans, same as previous, nothing really going on there. So most mortgage borrowers in the U.S. are getting the GSE-backed loans, so they're not really seeing a big difference and change there. But for maybe the non-conforming loans, you're seeing tighter standards, at least in the SLU's report. And looking forward, the SLU's report was, I would say, well, it wasn't super bearish. So it says things are tight, but the loan officers were thinking that maybe demand will be strengthened in the coming quarters, which I found to be a little bit interesting, given the fact that they also expected further tightening in CRE, credit card, and auto loans, but unchanged tightness in C&I and residential real estate loans. So kind of a mixed bag, but some pockets of further tightening, but maybe the tightness in the economy is stabilizing now that the Fed has kind of signaled that they're going to be stuck where they are, and then they're biased to cut rates at a future date to be determined when the committee is confident enough to do so.
Yeah, I remember, Eric, that first time we covered the SLU's. I think it was you and I did it, and it was right after the May 3rd Fed meeting, and this was after the Silicon Valley Bank implosion, and it was like they were asking about the SLU's, and we were like, or at least I was like, I don't, what is that? What is this word that they keep saying? And so that was one of, that was a timely topic and something that I think was pretty interesting at the time, and obviously ever since then, kind of wanting to see what the lending standards are. So this report is, while it did is a survey report, and so we obviously don't put too much weight in it. It is always good to get those anecdotes and kind of hear what people are, or what, bank loan officers are thinking.
Yeah, definitely a report to keep an eye on, especially in a week like this one where there wasn't much else going on. Wednesday we got consumer credit for December, and came in a lot lower than the estimate, but it's a volatile number, so I'm not really putting too much stock in that. Jobless claims dropped on Thursday, and they decreased 9,000 to 218,000. So kind of the moving average ticked up a bit, but continuing claims declined 23,000 to 1,871,000. And that's a more elevated level than it's been over the past, year to 18 months. So definitely something to keep an eye on. Maybe there's a little bit of softness building there, but I think on aggregate, the labor market maintains its strength in the United States, but there are these slight warning signs, so just investors need to stay on their toes, so to speak. Wholesale trade sales came in for December on Thursday as well, and the actual there was positive 0.7%. The survey was 0.3%, so a little bit of a beat of expectations, and wholesale inventories came in right on expectations at 0.4%. And that rounds up kind of the macro for the week.
Yeah, Eric, and I guess that makes sense. And as you said, it was a quiet week there.
I guess one thing I could bring up, sorry to jump back into it, is there were revisions to CPI that dropped today. And long story short, nothing to see here. Revisions were minimal, as expected, for 2023 CPI.
Yeah, and I remember there was a big to-do about it last year, so I guess I would say as we get further away from the COVID pandemic that these revisions will get lower and lower. And as you said, it was kind of as expected here from the revisions today. Let's move on to the topic of the week. And today we're going to talk about the Treasury quarterly refunding announcements. This is something that we did talk about back in, I think, August and November. November was the big one where the announcement came out and we got a big market rally even before Chair Powell talked at that FOMC meeting. But Eric, why don't you talk about why it's on our radar today and why we think it's interesting to talk about?
Yeah, for sure. So as many of our listeners know, and for those that don't know, unfortunately, the U.S. Treasury's public debt outstandings at $34.2 trillion. That's 120% of GDP. It's not a good look. And with interest rates are elevated on government debt, it makes it much more expensive. We crossed the $10 trillion mark on U.S. government debt in the global financial crisis, $20 trillion in 2017, and $30 trillion in 2022. I mean, it's kind of crazy that, you know, took 10 years to get to 20, but then only took 5 years to get to 30. Hopefully, it only doesn't take 3 years to get to 40, but we're not on a good path, and it looks like we may get to 40 sooner than we want. So that's why it's on the radar. And another thing that came out this week that was causing some headlines and consternation was the CBO. The CBO released a report this week that warned in 2025, debt interest costs could exceed World War II levels, which is pretty mind expanding if you think about that. You know, not since World War II, global conflagration, were U.S. government debt interest levels at the level that they're forecasted to be in 2025. So this is a serious problem. And the CEO of Double Line Capital, Jeffrey Gundlach, has been on the record talking about this, but now you're starting to hear, you know, these government bodies like the CBO talk about it. So, I mean, it's really coming into the forefront of public consciousness. And I think it's important for investors to be aware of the fundamentals in the Treasury market. And that's kind of the backdrop of why we think this is a good time to revisit this area. I'll end with a quote from the CBO director, Philip Swagel, said, net interest costs are a major contributor to the deficit, and their growth is equal to about three quarters of the increase in the deficit from 2024 to 2034. So it's not a rosy picture. And I think we've got to address this issue as a country. And as investors, though, we're trying to be objective and trying to analyze the supply and demand market of U.S. Treasury securities. And that's kind of the backdrop.
All right. And let's we'll get into what it is. And it is the kind of, as you said, Eric, it's based on public debt. And it's the, U.S. Treasury has to issue bonds to fund the government's borrowing needs on a periodic basis. I guess the Q and the QRA really gives it away. It does happen on a quarterly basis. And it basically informs investors of its near-term intent for the size of the sales based on projected financing needs. And it also includes, and so that investors are not surprised, it includes the day auctions will take, or, you know, the time auctions will take place, the size of the auction, the tenor, so whether it's, you know, the 2-year treasury or the 5-year treasury, the 10-year treasury or the long bond, and the type. So that, you know, those are the notes that I just mentioned, the coupon notes. Also, they'll talk about the type, you know, whether it's how much is in T-bills, how much is in notes, how much is in long bonds, how much is in TIPS, so your treasury inflation protected securities, and also floating rate notes. So it kind of lays it all out. Here's what you should expect to happen across further quarter. As I mentioned earlier, kind of recent examples of market importance was in August of 2023. There was a ramp up. The Treasury indicated a ramp up in sales for the first time in 2.5 years there, and it predicted that there would be further increases, and that kind of led to more sell off there in the Treasury market, the longer term Treasury market. But then in November of 2023, they surprised the market with a slower pace of increases than what they had hinted at 3 months earlier in August. But also that they, if you remember, Eric, they really did say that they put more into T-bills, more front-loaded it versus the longer-term notes. And that caused a rally in those long-term Treasury notes because there's going to be less supply out there. And that caused that rally on Fed Day before Chair Powell talked. And how does it work? Obviously the Treasury comes up with their number. They have to, you know, do refunding or reissuance of a certain amount. They have that number, and then they go to the private sector and they go to get advice and views from primary dealers and the TBAC, which is the Treasury Borrowing Advisory Committee. And the TBAC is, comprised of senior members of, you know, both buy side and sell side institutions. So people, how much demand are they going to want? What do they think they're going to want there from that side of things? Such things as banks, broker dealers, asset managers, kind of large asset managers, hedge funds, and insurance companies. And based upon the feedback they get from the TBAC is really when they kind of shift and they decide how to allocate the amount of money that they have to issue. And that was the, they took that feedback from the TBAC back in November. And that's why they kind of shifted their numbers there forward towards T-bills. Yeah, Eric, as we also have a thing on, why is this number important? Eric, as you kind of mentioned earlier, the higher cost of capital as rates have been rising there obviously makes your debt more expensive to pay off because the T-bills and the notes that are maturing will be replaced with higher cost ones, higher coupons. So that becomes much more a problem that accelerates some of that debt burden. And then also, with the quantitative tightening runoff continuing to go as debt matures, it kind of rolls off the Fed's balance sheet there. They have to increase the funding needs there. Maybe that will become less of an issue, later this year as the Fed tapers their quantitative tightening. That should help there, at least from that side of things, from the issuance side. And then also, over the past few years, and this becomes a very hot topic every once in a while when you look at the amount of treasuries that foreign governments are buying and how that number has been decreasing over time. And because they are, basically price insensitive buyers, they want that dollar exposure. They buy treasuries for their safety. They just kind of wave them in independent of what the yield is. As that number goes down, then if you have a larger or the same amount of issuance, then you're more price sensitive buyers, whether it's asset managers, pension funds, hedge funds, maybe less on the hedge funds. They're probably not buying treasuries as a long-term investment. They're trying to buy them and flip them. But insurance companies also become much more price sensitive or yield sensitive. And so they are going to demand higher yields. And I think that's why you've started to see a little bit more of a push in the rise in yields from those price sensitive buyers that could be the so-called bond vigilantes out there, really pushing to keep those yields higher. And then also the issue becomes a one of fiscal sustainability. And as we continue this pace, and as you said, Eric, that kind of half-life of a $10 trillion growth in debt is obviously decreasing as the half-life, that fiscal sustainability becomes much more in question. And that's really caused the rates to be much higher than they would be otherwise. And so, this is something that's been market, or has the potential to be a market moving event. And that's kind of why we wanted to highlight the quarterly refunding announcement. We just had one, I believe, last week or 2 weeks ago. And so we're not due another one for another 3 months or so. But it's something to keep in your back of your mind as you start thinking about and seeing the size of the debt grow and seeing that we're going to have to issue more treasuries, and with the balance sheet quantitative tightening slowing down, all these things are going to intermingle and mix. And that's kind of how you, I guess that's how you create markets and kind of figure out where your market clearing price is on the treasuries. A couple of past episodes that Sam highlighted here that maybe if you want to do a little bit more of a deeper dive, you could go into it. Episode 117 on May 26th of last year, 2023, we did cover the debt ceiling a little bit. Obviously, that has an issue there because the higher the debt ceiling is, the more issuance there is. We also talked about quantitative tightening on May 6th of 2022. That's episode 64. This one, quantitative tightening started, I believe. We kind of covered the basics of quantitative tightening on March 25th of 2022, episode 58. And then for those of you long timers who have been around us for a long time, on September 3rd of 2021, we did cover treasury auctions. So this kind of works hand in hand with treasury auctions and the quarterly refunding announcement. That is episode 31. Well, if there's anything else, Eric, you wanted to touch on here on the quarterly refunding announcement?
No, I think that covers it for our listeners. Jumping into next week, we got a pretty heavy week coming in, and I think every trader on Wall Street is going to be looking at Tuesday as a big day because CPI comes out. And the CPI year over year for January 2024 is dropping next Tuesday. The forecast is for 2.9% headline. The prior was 3.4, so a pretty big drop there, but looking into core, the forecast is for 3.7% year over year. The prior was 3.9. So we'll see if the inflation continues to abate. I know that the Fed is all about confidence right now. That's at least my kind of what I've been taking away from Chairman Powell's statements and other Fed speak is they just need to become confident that the inflation dragon is slain. And that's really what they're focusing on. So if you see a few months in a row of the continued downtrend in inflation, I think that they're going to be then open to lowering interest rates, but not until that point. And he also said something pretty interesting on 60 Minutes where he doesn't need to see inflation down at 2, but if they see the trend down and it in the 2 handle on core PCE, which is what they look at, but CPI and PCE, you know, have a lot in common. That's what's important. So anyways, keep your eyes on that. That'll be a market mover.
This could be one of those rare times where it's much more the direction versus the magnitude that's more important. Obviously, you get a huge downtick, then you become, I guess if you get a huge downtick in inflation, you probably look at that as more of an aberration. But if you kind of get a slow grind down, then you feel a little bit more comfortable that's a realistic number. And if you get less of a grind down or a little pop back up, then that obviously becomes much more problematic. So I'd say that it's more the directionality than your order of magnitude that becomes more of an issue, you know, on Tuesday.
I agree with that assessment. I think that the trend is what they care about right now. They like where it's been going and they want it to stay in that direction. So on Thursday, we get retail sales drop and we also get import prices. So pretty interesting group there, along with initial jobless claims. Nothing really new in the forecasting for initial jobless claims. There's no surprises expected. The retail sales kind of survey on the advanced numbers for it to decline by 10 basis points, where the prior was strong at positive 0.6. But, you know, I don't know if I really trust to put too much stock in the surveys on retail sales. But look for those numbers when they come out. And look for the import price data. It's always interesting to see how that comes in. We're going to be getting our housing starts and PPI on the 16th, Friday. So definitely PPI is an interesting thing to look for. The forecast is for it to be increasing year over year at 0.7%. The prior was 1.0%. So definitely some interesting stuff to glean on Friday. And we get the University of Michigan sentiment survey, soft data. Probably the most useful part of the report is the kind of inflation expectations component. at least in the current market environment. And that kind of rounds out what to look out for next week.
Oh, so it is inflation week next week with both CPI and PPI. So, you know, sometimes we don't get inflation week. But I guess with that, I guess that kind of wraps it up for this week. Eric, I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in.
Yeah, thanks to our listeners out there today on DL Minutes. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can pick up the latest episode every before the bell on each Monday or listen live here on X. We're available on all your favorite podcast platforms. Don't forget to send us an email on Twitter, an email at minutes@doubleline.com, or you hit us up on Twitter, DLine Minutes, and we can address your questions, comments, or suggestions.
And don't forget our website is doubleline.com. YouTube channel is youtube.com/doubleline capital. We have 15 minutes ago just dropped a new perspectives episode on EM opportunities amid risky geopolitics. I haven't watched that one yet since it did just drop while we were recording. We also have the most recent episode of Channel 11 with Ken Shinoda titled No Free Money on Wall Street. And we also have both Jeffrey and Ken's post-FOMC thoughts from last week, both on the website there. Also, we have a new Between the Lines blog there by our macro asset allocation team. You can find that on LinkedIn. They're talking about opportunities in both China and India. Make sure to also follow our other podcast there, the Sherman Show podcast with Jeff Sherman and Sam Lau. Make sure to follow them at Sherman Show Pod. Thanks for tuning in and hope everyone has a great weekend.
And I will say, go Niners.
Yep, enjoy the Super Bowl.
This presentation was recorded on the date indicated. Views and opinions expressed herein are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the views of DoubleLine Capital LP, its affiliates, or employees, should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities, and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. The presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media, in any form, without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representations or warranties regarding the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this material. Liability, including any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is explicitly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice. The receipt of this presentation by any listener should not be construed as the provision of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual, nor does it imply that such person becomes a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but it does not imply low risk. Copyright 2023, DoubleLine Capital.